Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We do more varieties and flavors of cheese than anywhere else on Earth. By pushing the boundaries of what cheese can and should be, find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and I'm very pleased to welcome back the wonderful Vicky Bond. She is the president of the Humane League, a nonprofit organization that works to end the abuse of animals raised for food. She's also a certified veterinarian and animal welfare scientist who has spent more than a decade advocating for animals. Vicky, welcome back, and thank you so much for joining me again. I'm really excited to talk about eggs. High on everyone's list right now, I know.
Hi, Katie. Yes, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. I appreciate your assistant who reminds me of your existence on a regular basis. I wish more people would do that, actually, because Wednesday happens every week and I need a guest every week. The struggle is real, girl. It is real. Anyway, let's remind people, first of all, what is the Humane League? Just so people don't know that it's not the same thing as the Humane Society or, you know, some other humane sounding organization.
Yes, great question. So yes, we work to end the abuse of animals raised for food. And what that means is we get companies to commit to higher welfare standards in their supply chains. So asking companies to end cages for laying hens, improving the welfare of chickens raised for meat, for instance, and just getting companies to commit to these higher welfare standards.
Uh-huh. And that's really the only thing. You really basically work directly with companies. And what do you do? Approach their stockholders or shareholders or their boards?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really important. We work on institutional change because we can see we can make a bigger impact by getting these companies that hold so much power to make change in their supply chain. And we do that in a number of ways. We will meet with companies, meet with executives, talk to them about the issues of animal welfare and why they should make these changes, why their consumers care about this. And some of those companies will be on board and understand that this is an important issue that their consumers care about. And others will decide that this might be something they don't wish to invest their time or money in. And it's those companies that we will then move on to campaigning and making the public aware about the cruelty within their supply chains.
Public humiliation. Who doesn't love that? I should not make light of this, but I mean, that's essentially what it comes down to. It's public humiliation, which is forever and always going to be a very powerful weapon to use against anyone, no matter how shameless, with the possible exception of Donald J. Trump. But you know, we don't need to discuss him in any way. So today we're going to talk about your campaign to improve the animal welfare standards for laying hens. So I don't know if most people realize that the majority of egg production occurs in battery cages. Can you talk about what those are and what that means?
Yeah. So battery cages are tiny cages that have about 4 or 5 hens in there. These birds sit on these wire floor for their entire life, which is about a year and a half. And they basically can't even spread their wings. So if you think about birds that you see outside, chickens, they originate from domesticated jungle fowl, which is no different really from any other birds. And they want to do things like peck at the ground for food and perch up at night to feel safe and spread their wings and flap around and dust bathe and lay in the sun. All the things, you know, just be able to move, for instance. But these birds are compacted into these tiny cages. They're unable to really move around. They suffer from really debilitating illnesses as a consequence. They often get osteoporosis because their bones become so weak. And so we see that these birds suffer from a range of ailments. And the Welfare Footprint Project did a study and found that they suffer from 7,000 hours of pain, ranging from annoying to debilitating. And I did the maths. That means between now and Thanksgiving, basically, these birds will be suffering from annoying to very debilitating pain being in these cages.
And is that largely because of the impact of being on a wire floor, or is it the clipping of the beak, which is another practice that is very common in when you have hens packed into a small space? And the space, Vicky, didn't they recently, like within the last decade, didn't they expand the size of the battery cage? Because I remember it was like 12 by 12 or something. And so now it's marginally larger.
Yeah, it's the size of an iPad now. It really is.
Oh, come
marginal
on.
Is the right word. We're talking the size of an iPad these birds have. And they really do suffer because they can't move. Their bones become weak. You need to move around to have strong bones, and they don't do that. So they become much weaker, and that's how they can get these conditions. And you're right, they do beak trimming. They cut the end of the tip of the beak off. Because these birds are in these confined conditions, they get super bored and they start having what's called stereotypy behavior, where they start pecking at each other, and they can even peck each other to death. And so rather than give these birds more space, give them the environment they need to enjoy life, they instead take part of the beak off so that they can't do this behavior.
You know what surprises me about this is that I would think that having an animal be as miserable as these creatures certainly are, that would have an impact on how many eggs they're able to produce. These conditions do not impact their ability to produce eggs? They're still pumping them out as fast as they normally would?
These birds have been bred very specifically to lay a lot of eggs. So typically a normal chicken, I say normal, one you would find in the wild, would lay a clutch of eggs. So they lay like 12 eggs over a period of a couple of weeks, and that's a clutch. Instead, these birds lay 6 eggs a week. So basically 6 days of a week they're laying eggs, and their genetics is such they produce eggs over everything else. Their body will choose to produce an egg over its own being. That's why they have these physiological issues, because the body is being bred to do this, to lay these eggs. So there is an element of there is a higher mortality and those kind of things in these really horrendous conditions. But overall, these birds just lay eggs because their body has been made to do that.
And that is the miracle of genetics, people. Animal sciences, genetics, it's fascinating what you can manipulate an animal's body into doing through the crossbreeding and whatever else. I mean, it's not GMO, which, you know, is a whole different technology, but just hybridization can produce some really astonishing results. But let's talk a little bit about, first let's go through what is the percentage of chickens in the United States that live in battery cages? Because didn't California, I wanted to bring this up and maybe I did and I've forgotten, but California wrote a proposition, I think it was Proposition 2, wasn't it? About 10 or 12 years ago. I remember when I first started doing the show that this happened. And California said, we're not going to buy any eggs from hens that live in battery cages. And they targeted one particular company in Iowa, I think it was. And it created a huge hullabaloo. And they ended up cutting a deal with United Egg Producers. Do you remember this whole story?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so what you're talking about is Prop 12, actually.
Oh, Prop 12,
It may have been called Prop. It was, I think, my Prop 8 before, and then it became Prop 12. Anyway, regardless, what you're talking about is, yes, in California, there is a ban on the sale and production of eggs that come from hens in battery cages. They're not the only state that has this. There's 10 states in total now that have this form of legislation, with varying different years of when this is going to be implemented. But here in California, that came into fruition now, last year. And so in California, there is not meant to be any battery cages, and there's not meant to be any sale of eggs from hens that have been reared in battery cages that may be in places like Iowa, as you mentioned. But in terms of the US as a whole, two-thirds are still confined in battery cages. That is way too high, but it's a massive improvement on where we were before we started this work back back sort of nearly 10 years ago now, there was some kind of 5%, or 95% of the birds were in cages still. And we're talking now that we have 100 million birds out of cages every year.
Wow.
And it's thanks to this legislation. It's thanks to companies, some companies, moving to going cage-free. And that's why we're doing our expose, which is to highlight the companies that have made these promises but are relinquishing on what they said they would do.
Right. Well, so let's talk a little bit about, so your campaign has targeted especially and specifically companies that buy a lot of eggs. And some of them, as you just pointed out, have actually come along for the ride, and they are now only buying from eggs that are not from hens that are not in battery cages or cage free. We're going to talk about those labels in a minute too. Yeah. So who are the best known companies who are actually walking the walk?
Well, some of the retailers you may have heard of, like Walgreens and CVS, they actually committed to go by 2025 and brought that forward and came in at cage-free at the beginning of this year, which is fantastic.
That is amazing.
Other companies like Arby's, Taco Bell, Sprouts. We've also got some with companies with partial commitments that are moving in the right direction, like Kraft Heinz, Compass Group, a massive food service company that supplies, like, you know, hospitals and other places.
Yep.
General Mills, Target. So we have some big names that are making progress or have actually got there already.
Right.
And then unfortunately we have a number of laggards that are yet to
All right, so let's name and shame them. So who are the people who said they were going to go cage free and basically signed a commitment of some sort with you, right? And then have yet to implement that type of purchasing. Do they tell you why they have failed to change their policy?
Yes. Well, let me give you a great example. Wendy's, which I think everyone has heard of in the whole of the US, I imagine.
Of course.
So yeah, they really made a lot of song and dance that they were going to go 100% cage free by 2020.
Really?
And it's way past 2020.
Yeah,
they haven't done that. Instead, what they've done is they've said that there was technically this commitment was about their breakfasts that they serve.
Right.
But we know that they serve breakfasts in over 5,800 locations, and that those that is they're only at 6% of their egg supply chain today that is at cage free. So it's clearly not true.
Right.
This is what's happening. They haven't gone 100% cage free. And instead, I mean, that the way we calculate that Wendy's probably accounts for like 3 million laying hens in the US.
Right.
Being in battery cages because they haven't followed through on this commitment.
That's amazing. Now, how do you monitor? How do you ascertain that when a company like Wendy's says they're going to do that, what is the mechanism for, you know, seeing whether or not they actually have done it? It's not, I can't imagine that they issue you a report and give you the name of their vendor to check with, right?
I mean, companies
how do you know?
the reality is we expect companies to give public information to their consumers, particularly
right.
when they make these kind of commitments, when they talk about welfare in their supply chain. And so we would expect to see things on their website, and they've actually removed that cage-free commitment from their website, which says an awful lot.
Yeah, it does.
So that's what we would expect to see. We have some companies that are working on it and telling us their progress and beginning to put it out publicly. We want to see all those companies publicly showing where they are so that consumers are aware. Like, there are some companies that have not made any progress on this, and yet they still look, you know, people might think, having heard they're cage free or they're going cage free, that they're actually doing it, but they're not.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, and then we're going to talk about labels. What does it cost? Like, say you're a company that has, I don't know, 10,000 laying hens. Does that sound about right? Like, what is the normal size of a
in a battery
egg
cage? You're talking more like a million laying hens.
Really? In one, you know, one company will own one giant facility with a million hens in it.
I mean, the sheds I have been in, barns, you call them barns, I call them sheds. Mm-hmm. The barns that I've been in, you go in and they, quite literally, you go in and there'll be two floors. And in between that, because the ceilings are so high, you've got like eight rows of cages. And then those cages go all the way to the back. And so the way that you go along like platforms to be able to see into the cages. And so you can fit millions of birds into a large barn.
So When we talk about going cage-free, and we're going to identify what that means, but that, so that infrastructure of all those cages would go away. Would they still be able to house as many chickens without the cages?
No, they need to create new sheds. There is a limit to how much space, and it's mm-hmm. and it's important that the birds do have adequate space in these barns.
Right,
you can't just pack as many in, assuming that it's going to be okay. These birds need to have space so that they are able to exhibit their natural behaviors and mm-hmm. not feel like they're on top of each other.
Right, very interesting. I mean, because for instance, cattle. There's a stocking density, you know, it's like a cow has to have, you know, X number of feet by X number of feet. And I don't think they really pay that much attention to that with pigs, which is weird because they're so smart. They really don't like being crowded, but you know, whatever. So you're saying that the stocking density basically is not a number that would give any relief to laying hens. There's no like, obviously not with battery cages, right?
So, well, battery cages, absolutely not. I mean, we have in Europe, there are regulations on how much space, minimum space birds should have.
Right.
Unfortunately, the US doesn't have any regulations.
I know, it's weird. We completely cut chickens out of the animal welfare regulations mm-hmm. of this country.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
There are no animal welfare regulations for how to raise chickens. And that's why there's so many abuses with this. All right, let's take a very short break and we'll come right back with Vicky Bond from the Humane League. We're going to talk more about all the labeling that goes along with selling an egg. So stay tuned for that.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin, the state of cheese, makes half of the nation's specialty cheese and wins more awards than any other state or country. Our heritage and traditions, master cheesemaker program, and the American propensity for innovation all put Wisconsin on the cutting wedge of cheesemaking. With over 600 varieties of cheese to choose from and 5,500 national and international awards and counting, get ready to turn your refrigerator into a trophy case. Enjoying a Wisconsin cheese is basically like winning a gold medal in culinary achievement. Set your mind at cheese. When you bite into a wedge of Wisconsin Wonderful, you know it is made with the ultimate skill and passion possible. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Okay, so we are talking eggs, and one of the things that I see in the grocery store are various different types of labels. There's the cage-free, which is largely what we're talking about. Then there's free-range. Then there's pasture-raised. Can you define these different categories for people so they know what they're buying in case, you know, they haven't gone on a website to look at what that means?
Yeah, totally. So cage-free means literally that. The birds have not been in a cage in their life. Free range is a step up from that. So this means that they have some access to some form of outdoor space, but because there aren't regulations in the US to say what that should be. Again, mm-hmm. in Europe, it's 4 meters squared. I don't actually know what that is in feet. I'm sorry, it's not very helpful.
That's all right. People can figure it out.
But anyway, per hen. So they end up having acres to roam, basically.
Right.
We don't have that here. And so what that means is that can vary dependent on the label as to how much space they'll get. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it might mean that the outdoor space is very small, only a few hens can actually get outdoors.
Right.
And there's no real minimum how long those birds can be outside. So again, in Europe, it's 6 hours a day, but here there isn't that regulation. So
really,
looking for certifications on top of that you know to be good, like GAP, Global Animal Partnership, those labels, that label particularly has restrictions on like minimum space and things.
Although GAP has come under a lot of fire lately. There's another organization called Farm Forward or something like that I've interviewed a couple of times about how these, you know, GAP certifications wind up actually being sort of toothless and they're not doing what they're saying. And this particular organization has now severed their ties with the GAP powers that be. I mean, it's quite a sad comment on how these organizations can be corrupted. But nevertheless, it's better to have them, not have them, right? So you have cage-free where they can go outside maybe, but basically they're in big sheds.
So cage-free is typically, if it says cage-free, it means it's likely in a large shed barn, and probably don't have access
to outdoors. Okay.
And then free range has access to outdoors. And then there's pasture raised.
Thank you.
And then pasture raised eggs generally come from hens who also spend like many hours outdoors. And they tend to have, the pasture tends to have vegetation on it. They tend to have a lower stocking density. So these birds have more space per hen. Yeah. They have these nest boxes and perches. And typically won't have beak trimming or any forced molting as well.
Right. Oh, we didn't even talk about forced molting.
There's a lot.
Should we take a quick moment to explain forced molting? Why is that bad?
Oh, it's horrific.
Really? I mean, I had parakeets and I know my parakeets were never happy when they were molting.
Yeah. So forced molting is that it's to force these birds. So as we talked about, these birds just lay eggs at the consequence to everything else. Uh-huh. But at some point they will go through a season where their body's like, okay, I'm going to calm down in egg laying to some degree. This is normally around about a year of age. And I'm going to lay less eggs, but of course this is, they're treated as production. And therefore to make sure that they increase their egg laying amount back up again, to force a molt, they take away their water and their food. So they basically completely starve them.
Oh,
and what that does is it shoves them into thinking that they basically think, oh my goodness, it's winter. I stop laying because there's no light. There's no food. There's very little water. And they do this for a few weeks. These birds this happens to these birds. And then when they then give them the water and food and up the lighting more, these birds then come back and start laying nearly as many eggs as they were doing, you know, at the beginning of their life.
Right.
And so it's a way to elongate their production life. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely cruel. It's banned in Europe. It's a horrendous practice and it's typically done in cage systems. It's much harder to do in cage-free systems because these birds are under so much stress that they then exhibit other behaviors that are really negative to the birds and impact the flock and actually outweigh the benefits of making these birds lay more eggs.
Wow, that's incredible. All right, so what about organic? If you're labeled organic, does that mean that your hen had a better life?
In the US, no, yeah. Unfortunately not. It doesn't really pertain to any welfare standards. It's much more to do with the diet that these birds are having rather than actually improvement in welfare standards. But if anyone living in Europe or hearing this from Europe or that is different because there are a lot of regulations in Europe for organic that also include animal welfare. But unfortunately,
right. So when we see labels like American Welfare Approved or Certified Humane or even GAP, those are probably kind of hard to get, especially at this level with poultry. Although why I say that, I don't know. But is that, you feel like those labels are doing what they say they're doing and it's having the impact that it's supposed to?
There's certainly an improvement on no label for sure.
Right.
Because these birds then have some form of restriction on minimum standards. But as I said, like this varies between, so GAP 5-star, for instance, is better than GAP 1-star in terms of what these birds get. And the same with AWA and Certified Humane. There's improvements, but do they go far enough? Not necessarily.
When a producer gets a certification like AWA or Certified Humane, what do they have to do to get that certification? They have to demonstrate cage free, or they demonstrate free range, or they demonstrate pasture raised. I mean, are those the criteria that they have to achieve?
Yeah, there is a criteria. So AWA means the chickens are cage free. They have a certain designated amount of space and enrichments. They will have outdoor access and natural light. Mm-hmm. And it also prohibits molting. Certified Humane covers pretty much the same, except the hens will only have outdoor access if it's labeled free range. So if it's not, then there's no kind of natural light requirement under that certification. Mm. And with all labels, you know, on-farm audits happen, but not to all farms every year. So
right.
The auditing is different between different labels as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's where GAP, I think, got into trouble was they weren't auditing their farms enough. And so it was discovered that some of the farms that had gotten GAP certification weren't actually, in fact, following their protocols, which speaks to the fact that you need to fund those organizations more so that they do have that on-the-farm inspection on a regular basis. So to go back to like transitioning from battery to cage for your free range, like I'm wondering like what is the economic impact for a producer? I mean, you said if you take the cages away, they have to have more sheds, more barns. So that's quite a significant cost. And if you don't do that, of course, you don't have as many hens, you don't make as much money. So how do we incentivize producers to make that transition themselves? What if they don't have the space? Or, you know, I'm just playing a little devil's advocate here, but, you know, what if, like, what about the poor human? He's trying to make a living.
There is enough space to be able to put these, I mean, there is a lot of space typically on farms here in the US. So these sheds don't have to be, perhaps we're imagining them to be absolutely ginormous. They're not that much bigger. And the reality is this shift needs to happen. Legislation's coming in 10 different states, and we're getting more legislation each year. It's right. going to be either the producers decide to move forward and move into the future, or unfortunately choose a different profession, because the reality is this needs to happen. It's not sustainable to have these systems and to cause this much cruelty simply for the price of, you know, a cheap egg that these companies are making a lot of profit off.
Well, not even a cheap egg anymore. I mean, we're going to talk about that in a minute. But so what kind of leverage do you bring to companies to encourage them to transition to cage-free or better? Like, how do you guys approach them? Let's hear what's your pitch? How do you say, yo, I need you to spend some money and potentially make less money in order to have better welfare standards? I mean, in a culture like ours,
it's a great question. We will approach companies and say, what is happening with your supply chain? If we're talking eggs, can you tell us what kind of systems you're using? Some of these companies won't even know that, really.
Oh, really?
They will have so little information. And you will talk to executives that have never seen what a hen looks like in a cage. In fact, most people. And so when you show them this, they often are horrified. It's very hard to find a person that will look at a hen in a battery cage and think that's acceptable thing to do. And so there is often just being informed about it can make a difference and showing them the public's reaction to this, because at the end of the day, we are a campaigning organization. We will, alert the public to how these birds are kept and how these companies are permitting it within their supply chain so that they can make more profit. And companies then quickly realize that it's not good for them to continue like this, knowing that actually there is a minimum standard that people expect. And when you ask the general public, do you think this is where your eggs come from? They are horrified and don't think that's where they're coming from. And yet that is the vast majority of systems here in the US.
Oh, yeah. Well, we are a nation where profit over people is our mantra. So, you know, that extends to animals too, like, you know, and even the guys who are producing these things. So you would think, though, because isn't it true that most of these sort of earthy, crunchy labels, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but, you know, like the certified humane, animal welfare approved, cage free, blah, blah, blah. Don't they charge a higher price point for eggs that are produced under those systems?
If there is a price in there, it's often because they do things that the other systems aren't doing. You know, you don't, if there's no auditing, how do you know what the product you're buying from is coming from? Like, auditing is important. And so that comes with a cost, of course. But it's worth noting that, like, retailers, for instance, they really take advantage of higher welfare. They take advantage by putting the price up because they know people will pay more because it's higher welfare, even though the cost is actually not nearly as increased as it may appear by the cost difference they put the eggs out.
Wow. Yeah. Very interesting, Vicky. Well, so let's talk about, I mean, it's the subject on everybody's mind, right? Eggs are insanely expensive right now. Mm-hmm. And from what I'm reading, it's not because of avian flu in 2021, because new flocks appear about every 6 to 8 weeks. There's a whole new flock of hens laying. Takes very little time for a hen to grow to maturity, right?
So, I mean, the reality is it is avian influenza predominantly, but it's not just that. So you've got a number of things that are compounding it. So avian influenza is wiping out millions of birds. And just to be clear, not only is it wiping out birds, but the method that is being used to kill these birds is to do ventilation shutdown, which is absolutely horrific and means the birds basically overheat and suffocate. And it can take hours for these birds to die. Ooh. But that's another subject because we're talking about the price. But
we can talk about that too.
Yeah. Avian influenza is impacting. There's no doubt. You know, if you have a shed of birds and you have to
euthanize 50,000 of them. Yeah.
However many it might be, or like 500,000 of these birds, right. Because if one bird is found to have avian influenza, they have to kill all of them. They don't just kill the one bird. They kill the whole shed of birds.
Yep.
Then you've then got to clean that shed. You've then got to wait for, I mean, birds take 18 weeks to get to maturity of actually laying. So it's not, it's 18 weeks when they start actually laying. So you've got that period of time where you've got to get, mm-hmm. and bear in mind, those other chicks that were already sitting there waiting to become laying hens were already earmarked for another shed. So you've got to create more chicks than was expected, right? That takes time. And mm-hmm. is there enough locations or growers to be able to do that? Probably not, because we don't have the growing sheds. Growing sheds is where the chicks that pullets.
Which, I see.
You know, are grown. We won't have those because they're already, like I said, earmarked to go to other sheds. So there is definitely a supply chain issue. There is definitely an issue of simply not having the same amount of eggs being produced because we don't have the same amount of laying hens. But there's also another thing, which is the grain, the cost of grain. Everything is in fluctuation right now because of the war in the Ukraine and Russia. That has impacted severely prices of grain. And food normally accounts, I don't know if this is exactly right for laying hens, but typically around 60% of cost is like the grain that these birds consume. Mm-hmm. And so if that price goes up, that also causes an impact. So you've got these two compounding factors. Mm. Then you've also got that that companies do want cage-free, and so there's a demand for cage-free, but if producers haven't taken the step to going cage-free yet, that obviously then makes that a higher commodity. So we've seen this before in the past. We haven't, not with the wars per se, but we've seen where there's been this impact of like, we want cage-free eggs, where's the supply? And then they become like worth more, so to speak.
Right.
But the other reality is that these companies, particularly retailers, will often put a higher price on these eggs just simply because they know people will pay for them. So then if they're going to make the costs go up, it's probably not going to be the caged eggs, but the cage-free ones they may also. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of things happening, but definitely avian influenza and the grain costs are significantly making the cost of all eggs go up.
Well, thank you very much for that. Because, you know, I am a conspiracy theorist by trade. And I see a conspiracy under every rock. And I certainly saw one the escalation in price has just been breathtaking. But I had not factored in the cost of grain. And chickens are largely fed on corn. Isn't that right?
Yes. So, yeah. And soy sometimes.
And soy. Things, yeah. So. And even sunflower seeds, I think, are part of chicken
food. And even fish, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah. Well, in Britain especially. Oh, my God. People are insane with the fish meal. I'll never forget making a chicken stock in England when I was in 1976, when I was a young person. And I had roasted a chicken and then I put the bones in the water and boiled the stock. And did it smell like chicken? No, it smelled like fish, mm-hmm. which I hate. So I was like, oh my God, never did that again. I mean, I just thought that was the craziest thing. Mm-hmm. I make chicken stock every week, so I really don't want that fish thing happening. Anyway, so where do you see this heading? I mean, you said it's not sustainable. I will respectfully disagree with you only because I know what people are like, which is they want cheap food. And companies that are, you know, have to answer to shareholders want maximum profits. So is it sustainable to remain a battery caged if that's more economic for the producer? I suspect yes, they will continue to do that. But you seem to think that they will not be able to do that ultimately. What makes you feel that way?
Ultimately, when people are shown, when people learn what a cage is for a hen, they do not want it. Like, 9 out of 10 people will say, absolutely not. And we've seen, you know, the avian influenza and the grain thing is somewhat challenging in the sense that it's an unknown, and avian influenza continues to get worse. And so this issue may get worse because, as I mentioned, the supply issues that go with that.
Right.
Reality is we cannot as a society stand by and use these systems. It cannot be that this is an acceptable way for us to create food, that there's so much cruelty in these eggs. These birds suffer so much as a consequence of it, that this is what we deem to be acceptable. And when consumers take to the ballot and sign off on these pieces of legislation, they sign off on saying, no, I don't want this. This has to go. So I am really hopeful for the future that we as a society will see that we should not be treating animals in this way, and there has to be another way. And there is another way, and other companies are doing it.
And other countries are doing it.
Yep.
I mean, and successfully. And yep, the egg producers haven't gone out of business.
Exactly.
Well, let people know how they can support your campaign and learn more about the other work that you're doing. What do they need to look at? Is there a newsletter they can sign up for?
Yeah, thank you. If you want to check out the report, you can go to Cage-Free Egg Expose, so egg as in EGGSPOSE.com, and you can check out our reports. You can go to our website, thehumaneleague.org, and there you can get involved. You can join our Fast Action Network, which will give you alerts as to the campaigns we're running and how you can get involved. You can also donate to us. That's also wonderful to help us move this quicker and move forward.
Right, right. It's all about the legislation, isn't it, Vicky?
Yes.
At
the end of the day, legislation is the end piece. The companies need to move forward. They're doing it. And then legislation comes in and just makes sure for any of those smaller companies that we've not got to, because we head for the major companies with the biggest impact, they also have to move. And then everyone has a level playing field to start with.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. People, to pay attention to what you're buying. It's always good to support the people who are trying to do the right thing. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks to my sponsor, as always. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye for now.
What Doesn't Kill You? Food Industry Insights is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.